That day Frodo spoke to Elrond, and it was agreed that they should leave the next morning. To their delight, Gandalf said, "I think I shall come too, at least as far as Bree. I want to see Butterbur." In the evening they went to say goodbye to Bilbo. "Well, if you must go, you must," he said. "I am sorry. I shall miss you. It's nice just to know that you're about the place, but I'm getting very sleepy." Then he gave Frodo his mithril coat and sting, forgetting that he had already done so. And he gave him also three books of lore that he had made at various times, written in his spidery hand, and labelled on their red backs, "Translations from the Elvish by B.B. To Sam he gave a little bag of gold.
"Almost the last drop of the Smaug vintage," he said. "May come in useful if you think of getting married, Sam."
Sam blushed.
"I've nothing much to give to you young fellows," he said to Merry and Pippin, "except good advice." And when he had given them a fair sample of this, he added a last item in Shire fashion. "Don't let your heads get too big for your hats. But if you don't finish growing up soon, you're going to find hats and clothes expensive."
"But if you want to beat the old Took," said Pippin,
"I don't see why we shouldn't try and beat the Bull Roarer."
Bilbo laughed, and he produced out of a pocket two beautiful pipes with pearl mouthpieces and bound with fine wrought silver.
"Think of me when you smoke them," he said. "The elves made them for me, but I don't smoke now."
And then suddenly he nodded and went to sleep for a little, and when he woke up again he said,
"Now where were we? Yes, of course, giving presents. Which reminds me, what's become of my ring, Frodo, that you took away?"
"I've lost it, Bilbo, dear," said Frodo. "I got rid of it, you know."
"What a pity," said Bilbo. "I should have liked to see it again, but no, how silly of me. That's what you went for, wasn't it? To get rid of it. But it's all so confusing, for such a lot of other things seem to have got mixed up with it. Aragorn's affairs, and the White Council, and Gondor, and the Horsemen, and Southrons, and Oliphants. Did you really see one, Sam? And caves, and towers, and golden trees, and goodness knows what besides. I evidently came back by much too straight a road from my trip. I think Gandalf might have shown me round a bit. But then the auction would have been over before I got back, and I should have had even more trouble than I did. Anyway, it's too late now, and really I think it's much more comfortable to sit here and hear about it all. The fire's very cosy here, and the food's very good, and there are elves when you want them. What more could one want?"
"The road goes ever on and on, out from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone, let others follow it who can. Let them a journey new begin, but I at last with weary feet will turn towards the lighted inn, my evening rest and sleep to meet."
And as Bilbo murmured the last words, his head dropped on his chest, and he slept soundly. The evening deepened in the room, and the firelight burned brighter. And they looked at Bilbo as he slept, and saw that his face was smiling. For some time they sat in silence, and then Sam, looking round at the room and the shadows flickering on the walls, said softly,
"I don't think, Mr. Frodo, that he's done much writing while we've been away. He won't ever write our story now."
At that Bilbo opened an eye, almost as if he had heard. Then he roused himself.
"You see, I'm getting so sleepy," he said, "and when I have time to write, I only really like writing poetry. I wonder, Frodo, my dear fellow, if you would very much mind tidying things up a bit before you go. Collect all my notes and papers, and my diary, too, and take them with you, if you will. You see, I haven't much time for the selection and the arrangement and all that. Get Sam to help. And when you've knocked things into shape, come back and I'll run over it. I won't be too critical.
Of course I'll do it, said Frodo. And of course I'll come back soon. It won't be dangerous any more. There is a real king now, and he'll soon put the roads in order.
Thank you, my dear fellow, said Bilbo. That really is a very great relief to my mind.
And with that, he fell fast asleep again.
The next day, Gandalf and the hobbits took leave of Bilbo in his room, for it was cold out of doors, and then they said farewell to Elrond and all his household. As Frodo stood upon the threshold, Elrond wished him a fair journey and blessed him, and he said,
I think, Frodo, that maybe you will not need to come back unless you come very soon. For about this time of the year, when the leaves are gold before they fall, look for Bilbo in the woods of the Shire. I shall be with him.
These words no one else heard, and Frodo kept them to himself.
Chapter 7 Homeward Bound. At last the hobbits had their faces turned towards home. They were eager now to see the Shire again, but at first they rode only slowly, for Frodo had been ill at ease. When they came to the ford of Bruinen, he had halted, and seemed loath to ride into the stream. And they noted that for a while his eyes appeared not to see them or things about him. All that day he was silent. It was the 6th of October.
Are you in pain, Frodo?
Said Gandalf quietly, as he rode by Frodo's side.
Well, yes, I am, said Frodo. It's my shoulder. The wound aches, and the memory of darkness is heavy on me. It was a year ago today.
Alas, there are some wounds that cannot be wholly cured, said Gandalf.
I fear it may be so with mine, said Frodo. There is no real going back. Though I may come to the Shire, it will not seem the same, for I shall not be the same. I'm wounded with knife, sting, and tooth, and a long burden. Where shall I find rest?
Gandalf did not answer. By the end of the next day, the pain and unease had passed, and Frodo was merry again, as merry as if he did not remember the blackness of the day before. After that, the journey went well, and the days went quickly by, for they rode at leisure, and often they lingered in the fair woodlands, where the leaves were red and yellow in the autumn sun. At length they came to Weathertop, and it was then drawing towards evening, and the shadow of the hill lay dark on the road. Then Frodo begged them to hasten, and he would not look towards the hill, but rode through its shadow with head bowed and cloak drawn close about him. That night the weather changed, and a wind came from the west laden with rain, and it blew loud and chill, and the yellow leaves whirled like birds in the air. When they came to the Chetwood, already the boughs were almost bare, and a great curtain of rain veiled Bree Hill from their sight. So it was that near the end of a wild and wet evening, in the last days of October, the five travellers rode up the climbing road and came to the south gate of Bree. It was locked fast, and the rain blew in their faces, and in the darkening sky low clouds went hurrying by, and their hearts sank a little, for they had expected more welcome. When they had called many times, at last the gatekeeper came out, and they saw that he carried a great cudgel. He looked at them with fear and suspicion. But when he saw that Gandalf was there, and that his companions were hobbits, in spite of their strange gear, then he brightened and wished them welcome.
"Come in," he said, unlocking the gate. "We won't stay for news out here in the cold and the wet, a ruffianly evening. But old Barley will no doubt give you a welcome at the pony, and there you will hear all there is to hear."
"And there you will hear later all that we say, and more," laughed Gandalf. "How's Harry?"
The gatekeeper scowled.
"Gone," he said. "But you'd best ask Barleyman. Good evening."
"Good evening to you,"
they said, and passed through. And then they noticed that behind the hedge at the roadside a long, low hut had been built, and a number of men had come out and were staring at them over the fence. When they came to Bill Fernie's house, they saw that the hedge there was tattered and unkempt, and the windows were all boarded up.
"Do you think you killed him with that apple, Sam?" said Pippin.
"I'm not so hopeful, Mr. Pippin," said Sam. "But I'd like to know what became of that poor pony. He's been on my mind many a time, and the wolves howling and all." At last they came to the prancing pony, and that at least looked outwardly unchanged, and there were lights behind the red curtains in the lower windows. They rang the bell, and Nob came to the door, and opened it a crack and peeped through, and when he saw them standing under the lamp he gave a cry of surprise.
"Mr. Butterbur! Master!" he shouted. "They've come back!"
"Oh, have they? I'll learn them," came Butterbur's voice, and out he came with a rush, and he had a club in his hand. But when he saw who they were, he stopped short, and the black scowl on his face changed to wonder and delight.
"Nob, you woolly-pated ninny," he cried. "Can't you give old friends their names? You shouldn't go scaring me like that, with times as they are. Well, well, and where have you come from? I never expected to see any of you folk again, and that's a fact. Going off into the wild with that Strider and all those black men about? But I'm right glad to see you, and none more than Gandalf. Come in, come in. The same rooms as before. They're free. Indeed, most rooms are empty these days, as I'll not hide from you, for you'll find it out soon enough. And I'll see what can be done about supper, as soon as may be. But I'm short-handed at present. Hey, Nob, you slow coach, tell Bob. Ah, but there I'm forgetting. Bob's gone. Goes home to his folk at nightfall now. Well, take the guests' ponies to the stables, Nob, and you'll be taking your horse to his stable yourself, Gandalf, I don't doubt. A fine beast, as I said when I first set eyes on him. Well, come in, make yourselves at home."
Mr. Butterbur had, at any rate, not changed his manner of talking, and still seemed to live in his old breathless bustle. And yet there was hardly anybody about, and all was quiet. From the common room there came a low murmur of no more than two or three voices. And seen closer in the light of two candles that he lit and carried before them, the landlord's face looked rather wrinkled and careworn. He led them down the passage to the parlour that they had used on that strange night more than a year ago, and they followed him, a little disquieted, for it seemed plain to them that old Barleyman was putting a brave face on some trouble. Things were not what they had been. But they said nothing and waited. As they expected, Mr. Butterbur came to the parlour after supper to see if all had been to their liking. As indeed it had. No change for the worse had he yet come upon the beer or the victuals at the pony, at any rate.
"Now I won't make so bold as to suggest you should come to the common room tonight," said Butterbur. "You'll be tired, and there isn't many folk there this evening anyway. But if you could spare me half an hour before you go to your beds, I would dearly like to have some talk with you, quiet-like, by ourselves."
"That is just what we should like to," said Gandalf. "We are not tired. We've been taking things easy. We were wet, cold, and hungry, but all that you've cured. Come, sit down, and if you have any pipeweed, we'll bless you."
"Well, if you'd called for anything else, I'd have been happier," said Butterbur. "That's just the thing that we're short of, seeing how we've only got what we grow ourselves, and that's not enough. There's none to be had from the Shire these days, but I'll do what I can."
When he came back, he brought them enough to last them for a day or two, a wad of uncut leaf. "South Flinch," he said, "and the best we have. But not the match of South Farthing, as I've always said, though I'm all for Bree in most matters, begging your pardon." They put him in a large chair by the wood fire, and Gandalf sat on the other side of the hearth, and the hobbits in low chairs between them, and then they talked for many times half an hour, and exchanged all such views as Mr. Butterbur wished to hear or give. Most of the things which they had to tell were a mere wonder and bewilderment to their host, and far beyond his vision, and they brought forth few comments other than, "You don't say," often repeated in defiance of the evidence of Mr. Butterby's own ears. "You don't say, Mr. Baggins, or is it Mr. Underhill? I'm getting so mixed up." "You don't say, Master Gandalf. Well, I never. Who'd have thought it in our times?" But he did say much on his own account. Things were far from well, he would say. Business was not even fair, it was downright bad. "No one comes nigh Bree now from outside," he said. "And the inside folks, they stay at home mostly and keep their doors barred. It all comes of those newcomers and gangrels that began coming up the Greenway last year, as you may remember. But more came later. Some were just poor bodies, running away from trouble, but most were bad men, full of thievery and mischief. And there was trouble right here in Bree, bad trouble. Why, we had a real set too, and there were some folk killed dead, if you'll believe me."
"I will indeed," said Gandalf. "How many?"
3 and 2, said Butterbur, referring to the big folk and the little. "There was poor Matt Heathertoes, and Rowley Appledore, and little Tom Pickthorn from over the hill, and Willie Banks from up away, and one of the Underhills from Staddle, all good fellows, and they're missed. And Harry Goatleaf that used to be on the West Gate, and that Bill Fernie, they came in on the stranger side, and they've gone off with them, and it's my belief they let them in. On the night of the fight, I mean. And that was after we showed them the gates and pushed them out. Before the year's end, that was. And the fight was early in the new year, after the heavy snow we had. And now they've gone for robbers and live outside, hiding in the woods beyond Archet, and out in the wilds north away. It's like a bit of the bad old times tales tell of, I say. It isn't safe on the road, and nobody goes far, and folk lock up early. We have to keep watchers all round the fence and put a lot of men on the gates at nights." "Well, no one troubled us," said Pippin, "and we came along slowly and kept no watch. We thought we'd left all trouble behind us."
"Ah, that you haven't, master, more's the pity," said Butterbur. "But it's no wonder they left you alone. They wouldn't go for armed folk, with swords and helmets and shields and all. Make them think twice, that would. And I must say, it put me aback a bit when I saw you."
Then the hobbits suddenly realized that people had looked at them with amazement, not out of surprise at their return so much as in wonder at their gear. They themselves had become so used to warfare and riding in well-arrayed companies that they had quite forgotten that the bright mail peeping from under their cloaks, and the helms of Gondor and the Mark, and the fair devices on their shields would seem outlandish in their own country. And Gandalf, too, was now riding on his tall grey horse, all clad in white with a great mantle of blue and silver overall, and the long sword glamdring at his side. Gandalf laughed.
"Well, well," he said, "if they are afraid of just 5 of us, then we've met worse enemies on our travels. But at any rate, they will give you peace at night while we stay."
"How long will that be?" said Butterbur. "I'll not deny we should be glad to have you about for a bit. You see, we're not used to such troubles, and the rangers have all gone away, folk tell me. I don't think we've rightly understood till now what they did for us. For there's been worse than robbers about. Wolves were howling round the fences last winter, and there's dark shapes in the woods, dreadful things that it makes the blood run cold to think of. It's been very disturbing, if you understand me."
"I expect it has," said Gandalf. "Nearly all lands have been disturbed these days, very disturbed. But cheer up, Barleyman. You've been on the edge of very great troubles, and I'm only glad to hear that you have not been deeper in. But better times are coming. Maybe better than any you remember. The rangers have returned. We came back with them. And there is a king again, Barleyman. He will soon be turning his mind this way. Then the Greenway will be opened again, and his messengers will come north, and there will be comings and goings, and the evil things will be driven out of the wastelands. Indeed, the waste in time will be waste no longer, and there will be people and fields where once there was wilderness. Mr. Butterbur shook his head. If there's a few decent, respectable folk on the roads, that won't do no harm, he said. But we don't want no more rabbling ruffians, and we don't want no outsiders at Bree, nor near Bree at all. We want to be let alone. I don't want a whole crowd of strangers camping here and settling there and tearing up the wild country. You will be let alone, Barleyman, said Gandalf. There is room enough for realms between Eisen and Greyflood, or along the shorelands south of Brandywine, without anyone living within many days' ride of Bree. And many folk used to dwell away north, 100 miles or more from here, at the far end of the Greenway, on the North Downs, or by Lake Evendim.
Up away by Dead Men's Dyke? Said Butterbur, looking even more dubious. That's haunted land, they say. None but a robber would go there.
The rangers go there, said Gandalf. Dead Men's Dyke, you say? So it has been called for long years. But its right name, Barleyman, is Fornost Arryn, Norbury of the Kings. And the king will come there again one day, and then you'll have some fair folk riding through.
Well, that sounds more hopeful, I'll allow,